Whether it was hers or not, Eve always ate the ice cream in the freezer, leaving just one bite that she didn't want to finish because it was, after all, yours.
2 weeks ago, we mourned the loss of Eve Carson. Today, we'll try to smile and remember such a beautiful person. Welcome to Carolina Connection. I'm Walter Storholt.
And I'm Julia Ritchie. Coming up, find out why this Wednesday might be a little alarming.
And some say Christmas is the best time of year in Chapel Hill, but it might definitely be here, March.
Madness.
So don't dribble away.
Because Carolina Connection
is a slam dunk.
A seat in the State House of Representatives is vacant today. That's because lawmakers booted Thomas Wright from the House on Thursday, marking the first time in 128 years that a lawmaker has been expelled from the General Assembly. Josh Ellis has more.
And the chair directs the sergeant-at-arms to escort former Representative Wright from the floor.
Those were the words of Speaker Joe Hackney after the House voted to remove State Representative Thomas Wright from the House. A vote of 109-5 in favor of kicking Wright out came after several members spoke on the appropriate punishment. Wright is accused of mishandling or hiding almost $350,000 in loans and contributions. Representative Rick Glaser, who also chaired the ethics panel that recommended his removal, said anything short of expulsion sends a bad message to the general public.
If people believe that their representatives are deceitful and untrustworthy and dishonest, and that we don't, when we know it, deal with it ourselves honestly, they will never trust in the laws we enact.
Speaker Joe Hackney echoed similar sentiments. He pointed out that even if Wright were to be exonerated of all his criminal charges, it wouldn't change his attitude toward the House's actions, calling them entirely separate. House rules were modified to allow Wright to be accompanied by his two attorneys. He also gave a rare statement on the charges during floor debate.
I am innocent of the criminal charges before me. However, I need an opportunity to prove that.
The five members who voted against removing Thomas Wright included Wright himself, Representative Earlene Parman, Representative Larry Womble, Representative Mary McAllister, and Representative Earl Jones. Jones even introduced an amendment that would have changed Wright's punishment to censure. He argued that booting the New Hanover County Democrat was inappropriate.
It's going to be problematic because there's a jury trial that's going to take place in about 30 days. And on May 6th, we're going to have the Democratic primaries, and the voters will decide whether to retain Wright or not.
Nevertheless, Wright's attorneys insist they'll appeal the decision by the House in addition to fighting the criminal charges. Wright was adamant that he still plans to run for re-election this year.
Regardless of the outcome of what would happen here today, but I would still seek my candidacy for re-election. I am still an elected member. Still a duly elected member by the people of that district, and we'll let the people of the district make their decision soon.
But Speaker Hackney maintains that if Wright is cleared of criminal charges and reelected, they'll deal with the appropriate course of action at the start of next session.
At the legislative building in Raleigh, this is Josh Ellis, Carolina Connection.
Thomas Wright is due back in court on March 31st and faces six felony charges. However, his attorneys said because of Wright's removal from the House, they will ask for a continuance.
A lot has happened in the case surrounding the murder of student body president Eve Carson since our last show. 2 weeks ago, the campus was in its first day of spring break, just 2 days after the announcement of Carson's death.
Leads into the investigation poured in throughout the weekend, eventually leading to the arrest of 22-year-old DeMario Atwater and 17-year-old Lawrence Lovett Jr. Police have also charged Lovett with the murder of Hidget Mahato, a Duke student killed in January.
The university held a memorial service for Carson inside the Dean Dome. The more than 10,000 people who showed up came to celebrate Carson's life.
Today, we are still in mourning, but we want to celebrate this special person that we knew and loved.
On dropping by the house unannounced for a glass of water during a midday run to find an embarrassed Eve on the couch with a facial painting her toenails. These are the memories that I'll carry of Eve.
She was a terrible driver. She was always late. Whether it was hers or not, Eve always ate the ice cream in the freezer, leaving just one bite that she didn't want to finish because it was, after all, yours.
After a flag football game with Team Friendship, she would bring us into a huddle around a football, play a Jock Jam song, dance around a little bit, and then point her fingers like she always did. Time out. Hudson, that was a great catch at halftime. And Anna, not so many tackles, but next time you're going to be so much better.
Eve spent a lot of time her freshman year helping me get elected student body president. And in an email I was able to see only this past week, she said, "All I do is spend time working on the campaign. Seth better appreciate this."
Her plans changed with the wind, wanting to travel to Australia one day, go to 8 campus meetings at the same time, and change her major the next.
Once, after divulging all of my crushes to Eve, she responded with a crush autobiography, a list of every single crush that she had had since kindergarten. Eve's authenticity rings throughout all that she did. Every project, every meeting, every dance party, every heart-to-heart.
Eve shared with me a part of one of her secret essays. Here's some of Eve's words. "Sharing and provoking and exploring. That's adventure to me, Tim. Adventure is finding oneness, finding community, even in unlikely circumstances. Adventure is encountering connections which link us and hopefully bring me closer to what I'm searching for. Universal truth, eternal goodness, faith."
Thank you to Jason Kahn for compiling those nice clips. There's now an Eve Carson Memorial Fund. For more information on how you can donate to it, you can go to our website, carolinaweek.org.
Stay tuned because we have more news on the way
on Carolina Connection.
What do you get when you cross a soprano with a cardiologist? Someone will sing their heart out. Just what they're doing at a local community theater. See, the Sopranos Choir and the Cardiologist Hospital contacted their community coalition and started a children's theater. They knew busy kids are less likely to try drugs. And that's music to everyone's ears. What can your group do? Contact your community coalition at helpyourcommunity.org. Because you get more
when you get together.
Welcome back to Carolina Connection.
You know, it's hard to believe that it's been 5 years since the start of the Iraq War.
But opinions about the war remain just as divided. Protesters marked the anniversary by holding rallies in several cities, including Chapel Hill, where more than 100 students gathered in the pit Wednesday.
Although many in the pit were calling for an immediate withdrawal of the troops, John McCain and two other senators went into Iraq this week on a fact-finding mission. But back in Washington, President Bush said in a speech that he remains optimistic about the war.
"No one would argue that this war has not come at a high cost in lives and treasure, but those costs are necessary when we consider the cost of a strategic victory for our enemies in Iraq."
Although Americans might still be worried about our security abroad, here in Chapel Hill, campus administrators are enacting a heightened security system that will debut this week. Ayanna Allen reports.
Wednesday, you might wake to this sound, or it might even interrupt the most boring lecture you've ever had to sit through. Wednesday's siren will indicate a test, but all others after that mean danger. Many college campuses are putting new initiatives in place to ensure the safety of students in the event of a life-threatening situation. Some students on campus know about them, and others don't.
"I got the flyer in the mail, and I signed up for the text messaging system online. And I know we're supposed to be testing out the sirens on the 26th.
Some of the new initiatives the UNC Department of Public Safety has developed include siren and public address towers to alarm students if there's a dangerous person on campus, a major chemical spill, or a tornado. The new text message program will send an alert to students, faculty, and staff in the event of a real emergency. Students have different opinions about the effectiveness of these and other new initiatives.
I feel that it's good that they're doing a lot of things now, but some of the stuff that they're doing kind of seems too little too late.
Honestly, I feel like they're mostly kind of useless. I mean, it's mostly stuff that's being done in response to things that people aren't going to try again. Like these posts they put in everywhere, like nobody's going to drive another car through the pit.
But not all students are eager to seek out this information to ensure they're safe. In Chapel Hill, I'm Ayanna Allen with Carolina Connection.
The test is scheduled to take place between 11:30 and 12:30 on Wednesday. So, Julia, we're planning to go to Beijing this summer for this year's Olympics, but you also spoke with someone this week who's been a little bit further south in China.
Yep. On this week's Carolina Around the Globe, I spoke to Jesper Bergman. Bergman is a business student from Copenhagen University who's teaming up with UNC senior Ben James. The two are selling tailor-made suits to the college crowd. How'd they ever think up such an idea? Both Bergman and James found inspiration for their business through their travels in Hong Kong. So tell me your connection to UNC.
I was part of the GLOBE program from Copenhagen Business School, where it's 15 from the Chinese University of Hong Kong and 15 from UNC. We formed kind of a global class and spent the summer in Hong Kong. And then we were all here in the fall at UNC. And I liked it so much that now I've come back here. Right now, we're trying to sell tailor-made suits to college students, and it's an idea we had while we were in Hong Kong and saw a lot of, especially a lot of the American students bought suits because they needed them for their careers, and we saw sort of that it could be a good idea.
So you told me you got the idea from going to Hong Kong. Can you describe that experience a little bit more and how that idea came about?
Hong Kong has a fine tradition for this fine tailoring, which is, I guess, originally from the UK. You find a lot of places in Hong Kong with these extremely highly skilled tailors where almost everything is handmade.
So what does it take to start a business of suit making in Hong Kong?
The main cost has sort of been time and energy, I guess. None of us started out as experts in the suit making field or anything, so often we had to, as we went along, we found out that our assumptions didn't match with reality, and then we sort of had to reorient and deal with these new realities.
So describe for me the perfect suit.
What a good suit does for sort of a prospect in an interview setting or job setting is that sort of it inspires them with confidence, and you know, pretty senior people interviewing for these entry level positions, and they recognize sort of a high quality suit.
Will you expand to women's?
We hope to do that. It's not any sort of a discriminatory reason behind it or anything. It's simply that it's more complicated to make women's suits. We're sort of aware of it, and we're sort of looking into it. And as soon as we feel we're ready, we're going to add that to our company as well.
The official name of their company is Bergman James. To check out some of their spiffy suits, go to our website, carolinaweek.org.
It is a beautiful day, Julia.
But will we see a cold snap on Sunday?
Johnny O joins us with your Easter service forecast next.
Hey, amigo. Hey, I asked you for whole wheat bread. This is not what I wanted. El Wheato.
Sorry for the confusion.
You know, that's the problem with these people. If you want to serve Americans, you got to learn to speak the language. You know what I'm saying?
No, sir. I don't. Enjoy your lunch.
Imagine the power of one voice. Click freedomcenter.org to find yours.
During the break, Walter's been putting on his sunscreen.
Hey, do I still have some on my face?
No, you look great. Speaking of looking great, weathercaster Johnny O joins us now. Johnny, we hope this weekend's weather looks a little better than Walter does right now.
And I think I have to agree. Yeah, definitely looks better than what Walter's going to look like with his sunscreen lotion, because it's going to be partly cloudy today. It's going to be a very nice day. Our high today, 74 degrees. Very warm, even warmer than what we expect for springtime at this time of year. And so get out and enjoy it, because it's going to be a very nice day today. Now, that's going to all change as we go into tonight. It's going to be cold tonight. We haven't seen temperatures like that in quite some time, so you're going to have to start bundling up, because if you're waking up for Easter sunrise service at 7:14, that's when sunrise is, partly cloudy skies, again, 38 degrees. So I know that I'm going to have my jacket out there if I'm headed out to Easter sunrise services tomorrow morning. Now, on Easter Sunday, this is where the major change comes by. It's going to be a shocker, about 20 degrees cooler than today's high. 56 degrees, again, partly cloudy skies, but cooler is the key word for your Easter Sunday. Sunday night, chance of showers. We have a system moving through, and so you might need to have an umbrella as well. And even cooler for your overnight low Sunday night, 34 degrees. And then for your Monday, that's when we're going to expect mostly cloudy skies. Rain is possible and expected for part of the day. And even cooler, our high, 50 degrees. So the there's a trend here. We start really nice today, so go outside today, and then it's going to get really cool as we go throughout the weekend into your work week on Monday.
Johnny, is it just me, or does it seem like every year we have nice weather the day before Easter, and then when we get to Easter, it's always very cold or rainy?
Yeah, I remember every year since I've been here in Chapel Hill that it always seems to be freezing cold when I wake up on Easter Sunday morning. So I think it's just a trend that continues to linger here in the Chapel Hill area.
Well, at least it's not both rainy and cold, and you just get one of the worst weathers.
I would have to agree, yeah. And I wish both of you and everyone out there a happy Easter.
Thank you, Johnny. You too. If you're looking for something else to do other than watch basketball this weekend, well, then listen up. The Daily Tar Heels Diversion staff, they take you on a look around the hill.
This is Brian Reed, Diversions Editor at the Daily Tar Heel.
And I'm Jamie Williams, Assistant Diversions Editor, and this is your look around the hill.
This week's movies sees wide releases of Drillbit Taylor starring Owen Wilson as a budget bodyguard, a ghost movie called Shudder about ghosts that show up in photographs, Tyler Perry's Meet the Browns, but also it's the opening of 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days at the Varsity Theater, which is a Romanian drama that deals with issues of politics and abortion, which should be interesting.
And if you're looking to see a show this weekend, there's plenty going on around town. Saturday night sees the sweet voice of Nicole Atkins hitting the stage at Local 506 with the Houstons, and local band Wolverines brings their loud brand of punk and metal to the nightlight. Sunday night, Portland band Blitz and Trapper brings their heavily Grateful Dead influenced indie rock to the Local 506 with locals Auxiliary House opening and the best singing band in indie rock, Fleet Foxes, playing in the middle.
Who said they were the best singing band in indie rock?
Wherever I read that yesterday.
All right, then. There you have it. That's your look around the hill.
Rock on.
Take a pop quiz with me. In what film did I feel a need for speed? What was my call sign? Who did I sit behind in the F-14? Oh, and one more question. Who does your kid sit behind in homeroom?
Know what really matters. Know about your kid's school. And know about your kid.
Hear what your kids are saying. Get more involved. Join your local PTA.
Welcome back to Carolina Connection.
On our most recent show, we brought you part one in our series on sports concussions. We learned about the link between concussions and depression in athletes.
So this week, we bring you part two of the series. Reporter Trey Shally looks at how concussions might also lead to Alzheimer's.
It happens in a flash. The crowd is cheering. Adrenaline is pumping through veins. And then it happens. A normal collision for most athletes becomes a serious injury for others. These injuries are far too familiar for Thomas Thornton, a UNC student.
I've had six concussions starting when I was about 9 years old. My last one, I was sophomore in high school, I believe.
Concussions occur in more than 10% of high school athletes each season. Since their brain isn't fully developed, younger athletes are more susceptible to concussions and the after effects. Dr. Kevin Guskowitz.
Research suggests that the more immature brain may be at risk for the more catastrophic injuries.
Studies show that high school athletes take longer to recover from concussions than college athletes. Normal recovery period for a college athlete is 5 days, but doctors recommend that younger athletes wait until all signs of the injury are gone. According to Ben Reed, the head athletic trainer at Chapel Hill High School, recovery often depends on how serious an injury is.
If they had any loss of consciousness, then they're out at least a week, and it could be longer, depending on how severe the initial concussion was.
300,000 Americans suffer from a sport-related concussion annually. Studies show people who suffer from concussions are more likely to be concussed again.
We know that once you've sustained one concussion within about a 5 to 7 year window, that you are about two times more likely to sustain another concussion during your career. And then once you've had three or more, at that point, about 3.5 times more likely to sustain a concussion.
The more head injuries these athletes suffer from, the more detrimental it's to their health. Thomas Thornton has to deal with the effects his concussions have on him.
I would say the most notable effect would be my short-term memory loss. I really can't ever remember a person's name when I see them. Anything that I'm not really concentrated on just goes right out of my head pretty fast.
The American Medical Association reports that athletes who sustain multiple concussions are at a risk of damaging their long-term neuropsychological functions. Elements such as verbal learning, memory, and speed of information processing will be affected. Thomas Thornton is worried about the long-term effects his concussions will have.
I'm worried about Alzheimer's for the most part, and I'm hoping they'll get on the treatment for that.
In Chapel Hill, Trey Shalley, Carolina Connection.
Well, Julie, that's why I always wear my helmet when I play roller hockey.
Probably wouldn't have you around if you didn't wear one.
Well, we do have Ben Kane around. He's here with an update about the Heels game last night and to try and make sense out of all this March Madness. Ben, take it away.
It's March, and it's madness. No one seed has ever lost to a 16 seed in the NCAA tournament, and last night the Heels made sure they weren't the first.
We've got to go out and be prepared ourselves regardless of who we play. I tell them all the time, if you're looking down the road at somebody else, that's where you're going, down the road back home.
The Tar Heels won't be coming home this early, as 14 of Carolina's 15 players scored in a 113-74 romp last night versus Mount St. Mary's. The 113 points was UNC's highest offensive output of the season. The game saw National Player of the Year Tyler Hansbrough drop 21 points, and a now 100% healthy Ty Lawson re-cementing his status as a premier point guard with 21 of his own. Overall, the Heels shot 61% and grabbed 48 rebounds to Mount St. Mary's 22.
We're more gifted than they are, and our guys really had a great workmanlike attitude about playing the game. But the margin on the backboards and the Dion and Alex gave us inside that we haven't had recently was really a big plus for us.
In a home-away-from-home environment in Raleigh, the Tar Heels improved to 22-1 in NCAA tournament games in the state. Hansbrough said it felt different to be the home team in NC State's arena.
I mean, it's definitely, you know, different than what we're used to. You know, it was good just to see, you know, everybody pulling for us and all the blue. It's just a little different feeling.
The Tar Heels are one win shy of tying their single-season record set by the 1993 NCAA championship squad. They'll try for that victory on Sunday night against the ninth-seed Arkansas Razorbacks, who won 86-72 last night over a slumping Indiana team. The Razorbacks were very efficient, shooting 54%, going 47% from behind the arc. In his first season as a Razorbacks coach, John Pelfrey has led his team to a 23-11 record. After a 9-7 season in the SEC, the Razorbacks were the final team to make the tournament from their conference, most likely due to their strong showing in the SEC tournament. Arkansas lost in the championship game to Georgia after two impressive victories over Vanderbilt and Tennessee. Much like the Tar Heels, the Razorbacks like to run, going 10-0 when they score 80 or more points. They're led by senior forward Sonny Weems, who averages 14.6 points per game and is coming off a huge 31-point performance last night. It should be a fun, high-scoring game tomorrow night. Tip-off time is slated for sometime shortly after 5 o'clock. Elsewhere in the Tar Heels' east region of the bracket, the Cinderella slipper is off for the 12th-seeded George Mason, who lost to 5th-seed Notre Dame Thursday night, 68-50. The Irish will play 4th-seed Washington State tonight at 6:40. Washington State already took care of business against 13th-seed Winthrop. And 2nd-seed Tennessee struggled early to find its shooting rhythm against pesky American, but were able to close it out in the final minutes, winning 72-57. They'll take on 7th-seed Butler, who shot lights out against 10th-seed South Alabama, cruising to an 81-61 victory. 3rd-seed Louisville passed its first test, crushing Boise State 79-61. The men aren't the only ones dancing this March. Don't forget about the UNC women's basketball team. The Heels are putting the final touches on their game plan as they prepare for their tournament run, beginning tomorrow night. The second-ranked Tar Heels are in their 4th straight number one seed, though not necessarily in the bracket they had hoped, playing in the New Orleans region, as opposed to right down I-40 in Greensboro, who hosts top overall seed UConn.
You put control and power in a committee's hands, and you have to do what they say to do. You know, I have a lot of thoughts and feelings about it, but I'm not going to make any comments about it until after the Final Four is over.
The Heels kick off play tomorrow at noon in Norfolk, Virginia, against Patriot League champs, the Bucknell Bison. This will be the first ever meeting between the two teams, but Coach Hatchell says their goal is to play with the same fire they played with in the ACC tournament.
We needed some rest. Like I said, they've gone hard and gone well the last 2 days in practice, just keeping that intensity and the edge that we had in the ACC tournament.
If Carolina wins, it'll play the winner of the Georgia and Iowa game on Tuesday night for a spot in the Sweet 16 in New Orleans next weekend. Meanwhile, on the diamond, UNC's third-ranked baseball team saw its 6-game winning streak come to a close last night at Maryland. Carolina lost 4-2 and dropped to 5-2 in the ACC and 16-4 overall. The Heels continue their series with Maryland at 4 this afternoon with undefeated pitcher Adam Warren getting the start. And the 22nd-ranked softball team defeated Maryland 2-1 last night. UNC ace Danielle Spaulding struck out 13 batters and improved to 8-1 on the season. Cassie Palmer led off with a solo home run in the bottom of the first and hit an RBI single in the second to account for both of the Tar Heels' runs. The teams take the field today at 1 in a doubleheader at Anderson Stadium. The lacrosse teams also host a doubleheader today. Head down to Fetzer Field to see the women's team start the action at 1 against Duke for its ACC home opener. The Tar Heels are ranked 9th in the country at 6-2 and are coming off a loss at 2nd-ranked Virginia last weekend. The Blue Devils are 7-1 and ranked 5th in the country. It should be exciting with another Carlisle Cup point up for grabs. Come early, the first 500 fans get a free T-shirt. After the women's game, the 4th-ranked men's team will host 9th-ranked Maryland. UNC is 6-1 on the season. Maryland is 5-2. The Tar Heels are looking to break their losing streak to the Terrapins that dates back to 2003. The game will be televised by ESPNU, the first time UNC has hosted a nationally televised game. As with the women's game, go early, get a free shirt. That's it for Carolina Connection Sports. I'm Ben Kane, and here's to hoping your brackets look better than mine.
Thank you, Ben. And unfortunately, Julia, my brackets don't look too good right now.
I didn't fill any out. But I do have a bet about who's going to win the national championship.
So, oh, yeah? What is it?
I'll tell you about it next week.
Oh, boy.
So stay tuned, folks. Up next, we'll hear some of your favorite Easter memories.
The odds of a child being in a fatal automobile accident are 1 in 23,000. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism, 1 in 166. To learn the signs of autism, visit autismspeaks.org.
What's up, Jack?
Welcome back. Walter, I don't think that's quite the bunny we were going for.
Oh, really? All right, well, how about this one?
Why not show your mobile some Playboy bunny love?
I can't believe you, Walter. We want the Easter Bunny. Just forget it.
Sorry. Well, despite rising gas prices and the earliest Easter to hit calendar since 1913, the National Retail Association expects holiday spending to reach $14 billion.
And because we all have our own Easter traditions, we sent reporter Gervais Haggerty to ask students about their fondest Easter memories.
When I was a little kid, I used to dye Easter eggs and hide them and stuff, and then I hid one and forgot where it went, and then we smelled it a few weeks later and found it.
My parents would wake me up at 6:30, 7, and we'd go to the sunrise service, and then we'd always have a pancake breakfast at our church right after that.
I'm scared of the Easter Bunny. I don't know, it'll have claws. I just thought it was going to attack me or something.
We would hide Easter eggs, and we had money in them, and it was Easter all year round because we would still find Easter eggs because my grandma would never count how many she ever had.
As a kid, I remember my little sister and I dressing up in these little church dresses that had matching hats that were absolutely ridiculous.
I have some fond Easter memories, Julia, but whatever folks hope to do this weekend, we hope you have some great times and make some memories of your own.
Carolina Connection is a production of the UNC School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Thanks for listening.
And as always,
go Heels!